for Capital FM, and you can catch us online at www.capitalfm.co.ke/listenlive. And we value your comments and your feedback and your questions. You can reach us at our WhatsApp line 0701-984-984. Our socials, Facebook, X, at Capital FM Kenya, hashtag financial forecast. And we keep saying every time as you're starting your week, like yesterday was a time where we were all out of office. And right now, I think everybody's taking time to actually get to rejuvenate and figure out what happened in the markets. So you can get a state of economy report by emailing info@mentoria.co.ke to get all your economic insights, data analyses, and forecasts. So the email is info@mentoria.co.ke. Ken, I am very specifically looking forward to enjoy today's show, because we do have a guest with us today, and we pick from a conversation in a topic we had the first week, interestingly, the first week of March.
Na nauliza all the government shirika zote za serikali kama KRA, na wauliza kwa heshima, as you do changes and especially increasing duty like the one we saw recently, it is important to do public participation.
Well, those are some of the things that really did happen last week. And we did look at, the bottom-up economy, what is happening. We did discuss where we can rate the government so far from the bottom, their beta economic transformation agenda. We've looked at it, but today we are taking a few steps back and we're looking at risk. So would you be as kind to introduce our guest today?
Absolutely, Nyambura. Indeed, today is what you'd say risk management 2.0.
Yeah.
Just a few weeks ago, we had Robert Hutchinson,
right,
who came to give us a perspective mm-hmm. on how to think about risk. Today, we have a special treat.
Right.
We have the honor of having Sospita Thiga.
Mm-hmm.
Sospita is the group head of risk, compliance, and performance monitoring at CPF Financial Services.
Right.
He is an industry leader in enterprise risk management with over 18 years of experience, having worked in diverse industries in both the public and private sectors. He holds a master's degree, an MBA, and a bachelor's in economics from the University of Nairobi. He is a certified public accountant and a certified enterprise risk manager. He is also a member of the Institute of Certified Public Accountants,
mm-hmm.
the Institute of Internal Auditors, and very importantly, the Institute of Risk Management UK. Karibu sana, Bwana Sospita.
Asante sana, Ken.
Yes,
pleasure being here.
Awesome.
Okay, Ken. So today we're going to try and ramp up everything that we normally discuss within a short period of time, just getting to understand what has happened globally in Africa and then in Kenya before we delve into more in-depth risk 2.0. And I absolutely am looking forward to, we didn't finish what we were discussing last time, some of the risks that are going to be facing businesses in such a highly volatile global economy. So, Sospita, we are thrilled and we're looking forward to learning more from you today.
Yeah.
So, from the markets, Ken, very interesting. The Dow Jones dropped 400 points as Wall Street started second quarter. And the other day we were discussing how the markets are actually looking okay. But what is happening and why do you think that has happened all of a sudden?
Indeed, it's a tough start to the second quarter for the Dow Jones. For many parts of the world, yesterday was a bank holiday.
Yeah.
In the United States, not quite. People are trading. And the Dow Jones 30 stock index, down 481 points. Obviously, sentiments on when the Fed will cut interest rates seem to be changing.
Okay.
I think many times on this show, I've talked about high probability of rate cuts in Q2.
Mm.
But the economy is doing quite well. So are these growing expectations that those rate cuts might be pushed out to maybe Q3?
Okay.
And that's what means we'll be in a higher interest rate environment for much longer. So obviously that means companies will be affected.
Right.
When interest rates are high, obviously performance is poor. And if you just look at the numbers coming out, Tesla, it's down 6%.
Right.
Its Q1 deliveries are quite low. The big tech companies, Netflix, Nvidia, all of them at least down 1%. So I think it's just changing expectation on when interest rates will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think the percentage that expected rate cuts happening in the first of this year was 78%.
Yeah.
That's come down to about 56%. So we are looking at possibility of interest rate cuts in Q3, and think the markets are really now starting to process on what a higher interest rate environment will mean
like
for their bottom line.
Okay. Another highlight that was noted was that still the credit markets are being overwhelmed by a buying frenzy, because investors are betting that the Fed will engineer a soft landing, taming inflation without causing a recession. And then the interest rate cuts, I think, are going to support. But I think we just keep... I think we had discussed, and it was meant to be... If at all I'm not wrong, we had discussed that these cuts are going to be coming in June. So when we are on the 2nd of April and you're seeing the markets being this volatile, what does that also seemingly tell us?
I mean, the expectation had been for 3 rate cuts.
Right.
When the economic data looks positive, people start assuming the Fed might delay any interest rate cuts. There might be actually... things are not as bad.
Right.
Let inflation continue coming down. And obviously that weighs in even on the bond markets.
Right.
I mean, the 10-year yield right now is at 4.38%, quite high.
Mm.
So I think the narrative, I mean, it's a mixed narrative. There are those who look at the labor market who are saying, actually, things are not that good.
Yeah.
And there are the ones who are saying, hey, look at the GDP numbers. They're not as bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Fed is still committed to 3 rate cuts. But the question is, when will those begin?
Mm-hmm.
My guesstimate is we'll be looking at possibly Q3.
So, Peter, have you noticed any happenings that are affecting also your global outlook and the risks that we'll be talking about later today?
So, thanks, Grace. Thanks, Ken, for having me.
Yeah.
I think... Robert Hatch did a good job last week, or the other week, about a month ago,
yeah,
educating us on risk management issues. Mm. So today we take it a notch higher.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, rightly put, we'll be doing a bit of horizon scanning,
mm-hmm,
just trying to understand global and local risks and regional risks,
yeah,
at mid-term, and a long-term nature.
Right.
So, yeah, so... When we talk about horizon scanning, I'll use a few horizon scan reports here,
mm-hmm,
just to help us understand both economic risks and any other type of risks. So,
right.
One of them is a report by Aventium,
right,
and Aventium is all of them are free reports,
mm,
which are available on the net.
Right.
So, looking at that report, one of the things that they identified as a mega trend,
right,
in the year 2024. So this is in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
Is something called PERMA crisis.
Right.
Yeah. So PERMA crisis is what practitioners popularly know as VUCA.
Right.
So this is a term I'm sure many of the listeners would have come across. So volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and a bit of ambiguity in the operating environment. And so what PERMA crisis then alludes to is that we seem to be jumping from one crisis to the next, whether,
yeah,
it's economically or even socially.
Mm.
And we've witnessed this, I mean, in the recent past,
right,
where we've had, I mean, just after COVID-19, we went into the war in Ukraine,
yeah,
shortly after the Gaza happened. And what then this portends to the business environment is instability. It becomes a bit unpredictable in terms of businesses trying to forge a way forward. And it also means a little bit of volatility.
Yes, which we have seen really rocking our
yeah
economy, yeah, so far, and global as well.
Yeah, so... So I think rightly put, earlier on you talked about what the Feds are doing.
Yeah.
One of the pressing issues lately has been the inflation rate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is across the globe. We felt it here in Kenya,
yes.
Although the statistics are out, inflation seems to be coming down.
Mm.
Not sure whether the common mananchi is feeling it in their pockets. But yeah, the inflation rate I think was 5.7, the latest statistics we've had.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully this will improve in the short to mid-term.
Right.
Yeah.
Ken, before we come back to what has happened globally, let us first look at what has happened in Africa. And we have a very young president who's just been sworn in, has made a lot of noise and news because he has two first ladies in the country. He's fortunate enough to have two first ladies, I can tell you. Probably they'll be more focused, maybe, I don't know. So, yeah, we saw... Oh, his name is very hard to pronounce, and I know we were trying to get the right pronunciation. Is it Faye? Faye? Yes,
Faye, correct.
Senegal. Tell us how this is going to shape. You know, everything has it has an economic outlook. It has a way it's going to be shaping Africa. It's going to have a way it's going to be also be shaping the regional trade and the country itself. So...
Yeah, that has caught the imagination of many Africans,
right.
The issue of the 44-year-old new president, Faye, coming into the office, and really the issue of the first ladies seems to have dominated social media. The issue of polygamy in Senegal tends to be highly debated.
Oh, okay.
If you go back to even, you know, literature books such as So Long a Letter,
mm-hmm.
by Mariam Abbas, he heavily criticizes polygamy, but also it's a Muslim country where it's there. So it's I think it has captured debate.
Yes.
But from an economics perspective, which is I as a chief economist, where I'm concerned is
right.
what his philosophy is.
Mm-hmm.
He has talked about economic patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
He has talked about negotiating foreign contracts. I think there's that idea that foreign contracts don't work for the ordinary Senegalese.
Uh-huh.
So very interesting, almost reminds me of Magufuli.
Right.
In a way of Tanzania first,
mm-hmm.
Senegal first type of policy. Now the international community has taken that in different perspectives. I saw tourism bookings have actually, cancellations have gone up 25% to 30%.
Okay.
Just because of the uncertainty.
Yeah.
But, you know, it could be a fresh take on the economy.
I think
it might focus on local production. It might focus more on jobs creation. So I think it's something to really watch. Obviously, even local leaders here in Kenya have been alluding to the Senegalese moment.
Okay.
So I think it's something that will continue to unfold.
Right.
Obviously, he's quite young. He's really not been known before. He's what you'd call an outsider.
Right.
From a political analysis perspective. So it's really much to watch, but it tells you also the young populations in Africa are looking for new voices.
True.
You know, maybe different perspectives from what maybe France has been advancing to them. So it could be a moment in Africa where a youthful population is looking for youthful leaders.
Okay. Well, back to what Suspita was actually talking about, the inflation numbers in Kenya came out. Would you know what was pushing inflation this time? I know in January we discussed there was school fees, then there was fuel, like power. So what has led to the rise of inflation?
Well, the official number came down to 5.7.
Okay.
The key drivers were transport.
Mm-hmm.
Transport costs have gone up 9.7%. House and gas costs.
Okay.
Another bucket has gone up by 8%. But also I notice on the food items, which is where it touches the ordinary household, some really incredible price hikes.
Right.
If you look at onions, up 65%. Yes, Nyamburi, you should be an onion farmer if you are looking for a business. Sugar is up 21%. Mangoes are up 20%. So on the food side, and this is where the Kenyan experience is, the economy almost on a daily basis, it's definitely still things are quite high.
Okay.
But overall what's called the headline inflation, 5.7, the central bank will be proud that it's within their inflation target of 5%.
Yes.
But also it also comes at a time when liquidity is very tight in the market. Yesterday there was a story on one of the local business papers saying that cash in circulation is actually down at the highest level since the demonetization exercise that we saw in 2019 when we were changing currency. So in January, cash outside banks went down by 13.8 billion.
Is there a correlation to, is there a correlation to mobile money, or they didn't do that correlation?
You know, bro, that's very interesting, and that was almost my first take. But mobile money is not new.
Okay.
So if that was the case, that trend would have been captured ever since mobile money was introduced. So clearly, this is, in my thinking, this is really the impact of the high interest, the bonds, first of all, the huge treasury bonds, infrastructure bonds, they drain money from, because people who maybe would have thought to maybe invest in a car or in a house, you'd be like, wait, I'm going to get an 18% bond, let me put it. So it drains money from the real economy. And I think that's really the reason, the series of high infrastructure bonds that have been played, I think they sort of push people to save more really than to spend. But those end up cooling demand because the limited amount of money in circulation means lower demand for goods and services. And I think that's what's driving our inflation numbers.
Transport, that has fascinated me. When they say transport, ideally, are they looking at matatus or SGR, airfare, or a motor vehicle, like the same way you're going to be using your private car? That has gone down.
And I think, and I know that's what's interesting, because you'd ask maybe fuel costs last month came down
by one shilling.
Yeah,
I'm still,
but remember how inflation is computed. It's looking at March this year versus March last year. So yes, somebody looking from a 1 month perspective, you'll say, okay, it's come down. But somebody look at it from a 1 year perspective. I mean, we crossed over 200 when towards the tail end of last year. So definitely it's still a significant wave of inflation.
And you've just discussed about the bonds. And what we did not mention about 2 weeks ago was that the CBK rejected 37.1 billion worth of investor bids. And I was like, Ken, why is the government refusing money when they absolutely need it so much? And we know that at 18%, it's a very good return, although they're going to pay at a very high rate. Why would they do that?
Well, I mean, you can't sustain an economy on high interest rates.
Right.
It kills growth. People move away from investments in the real economy. If you had a plan on maybe putting up apartments or opening a restaurant,
you'd
be like, actually, let me put it in these high-yielding bonds.
Sure.
So it can affect GDP, and it also increases the public debt significantly.
Yeah.
So I think they were alive to that. I think for them, what they needed was enough reserves to come in to be able to stabilize the shilling and all other things. But the net effect, they are aware that high interest rates have a negative impact on growth. So I think it was about time that they started sort of signaling a low interest rate environment. However, if you look at the medium-term plan, you know, it speaks about almost 16 trillion shillings worth of investments. For me, that means more government borrowing and higher interest rates. So for me, I find this somewhat of a contradiction, where maybe the Treasury is trying to signal lower interest rates, but the long-term plans for the government still involve heavy borrowing and necessarily mean higher interest rates. So interest rate direction in Kenya is not as clear as in the West.
So Peter, now we're coming back to you, and you also discussed the interest rates and the inflation coming down. And as we get into the risks and, you know, looking at some of the tough times, as you were talking about, the VUCA, that we have had that, you know, we were just doing strategy the other day. If there is one word that has been, it's the new lingo, it is VUCA. And it's just some of these things that we are even discussing are what is affecting business. So there is interest rates, there is taxation, there is the global happenings. You've called it, there's a term you've used.
Perma crisis.
So as you continue taking us from perma crisis and what has happened in global, Hamas, Israel, and then we look at even the number of elections that are actually going to be happening within the world, within Africa, in Senegal. So, yeah, you can take us through that part.
Okay. So thank you once again. Before I go deep into this, let me just refresh our memories. You know, risk is, you know, potential. It's not something that has actually happened.
Right.
Professionally, we look at the probability of it happening and the kind of impact it would have. I'm sure many of us already know that. But there are two concepts which are becoming increasingly very important in the risk world. So one of them is risk velocity.
Okay.
So risk velocity has been changing, just as the name suggests, speed of risk. Yeah.
It happens every day.
Yes, yes. So traditionally, risk was slow to happen, I guess.
Okay.
But because of the increasing global connectivity, ease of communication and travel, then speed of risk is really heightened.
Okay.
So I needed to mention this because some of the things I'll be mentioning are against this backdrop.
Okay.
The other concept is what you call a risk contagion. And like the term suggests, is risks are increasingly becoming more contagious. They are interconnected, like a web.
Okay.
So unlike the traditional way of looking at risk, where risks would actually occur in an isolated manner, risks now affect each other. So that's why you have something so far removed from Kenya, like the war in Ukraine, coming down to affect Kenya in a very significant way because of the contagion effect of risk. And it's a war, yet it affects fuel prices, then it affects food prices, it affects the global supply chain, and that kind of a thing. So I think it's important to note that.
Right.
So in terms of the risk trends that I would want us to focus on today, key reports that I've mentioned, one of them is the World Economic Forum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of the very forefront Horizon Scan reports, because it looks at risks in the short term and then in the long term. Long term being anything 10 years and above. And if you look at, I'll just mention at a high level and go into the details of it. So what the World Economic Forum predicted or sought to help us understand is that in the short term, the top risk was misinformation and disinformation. You know, misinformation being, you know, getting facts wrong. Disinformation, getting them intentionally wrong or passing.
I remember Cambridge Analytica.
Exactly, exactly.
The height of it.
Yeah. And we'll be looking at what are the key drivers of this. The other one that they talked about is weather issues, climate change, and extreme weather events.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it surprises me every time I talk about climate change, climate action in this part of the world, in Kenya. People think it's a global north kind of an agenda. They don't see the connection. But yet it's here, very close to us. The other maybe report that informs us and helps us understand the future trends is one by one of the institute I serve as a co-chair, IRM, Institute of Risk Management, the East Africa chapter.
Yeah.
So we attempted to also predict some of the key risks. So some of them was, of course, the exchange rate risk.
Right.
That was actually happening live at that point. Mm-hmm. And an interesting one was credit risk. And we've talked about the economy.
Yes.
Maybe the question we should be asking ourselves is how does this boil down to the individual, to the businesses?
True.
And credit risk is live. And most of the businesses I've talked to are concerned about credit risk. Will they be paid in time? Mm-hmm. Will they be paid at all?
The government does not have money.
Yeah.
it's very interesting. When I talk to entrepreneurs, many of them always say, counties, be careful of counties.
Exactly.
Yeah. You might not.
That's a credit risk.
Get paid.
Right there. And of course, credit risk is important because it cripples businesses. So the whole thing of outstanding bills, by government, by counties, has led to many business failures and the like. The other we, of course, identified was a sovereign debt default risk. Now, at the time, it looked, you know, they say when your neighbor has been shaved, you better put some water on your head. You could be
we
next.
We're coming for you.
Exactly. And we had seen Ethiopia default technically. On their debt, we had seen Ghana default.
Yeah.
So, all over to us Kenyans. Mm. Fortunately, that was dealt with, and it's positive. But in the meantime, before it was dealt with, it from a risk angle, it left a lot of anxiety in the market. Not especially investors not knowing what will happen from a Kenyan perspective.
Okay, so Peter, you're going to be telling us what kind of dent it left and how the government may be planned. I can see it's now 7 o'clock. We are going to go into the news. Woohoo! 98.4 Capital FM. this is the Financial Focus, a show that delves into matters affecting our economy. Myself, Nyambura Ndungu, alongside Ken Gishinga, Chief Economist, Mentoria Economics. Apologies for that small hitch. And today, we have a great guest with us today. So, Peter Diga, who is head of risk at CPF. And as we were just going into the break, we were discussing matters and things that are actually affecting our economy right now. And we were discussing how, so Peter, as we were going on break, the volatility of the Kenyan currency, which is one of the things that you had also predicted that are affecting things happening into our markets and our economy. So other than the foreign exchange, and when we were going on break, you just said that it did leave its effect, and a lot of, I think till now, people are still very anxious and they're wondering, is it really going to be okay, or is it going to go back to problems again? And I think even for the foreign investors and people who are actually trading the currency, they're still very jittery about it.
So it's interesting, Grace. I mean, there are different schools of thought. So one school of thought thinks that the levels we have seen, for example, the Kenya shilling appreciating against the dollar. So there's a school of thought that thinks that that was artificial, and we we've been there before. If you remember when Professor Njuguna Ndugu was the CBK governor a while back, he rained down on those aggressive forex investors in banks who were manipulating the price of the Kenya shilling to their advantage. The other school of thought thinks that the current situation is not sustainable because there are no fundamentals around it, and that they think that we'll actually close the year with the Kenya shilling to the dollar at even higher levels, at 170 shillings. So this, when we talk about VUCA, there's still uncertainty. We're yet to see. Maybe Ken is the expert. He should tell us whether there are fundamentals which are supporting the, now the dollar is at 131, I think.
Yeah, and it's come down to 128 last week.
So is that the plasticity? Is that the artificial? Or is that the fundamental supporting it? So different schools of thought. So what, from a risk perspective, then what happens? Anxiety.
Right.
When there's uncertainty in the market, there's anxiety. There's a lot of wait and see. And you just talked about the cash reserves in banks being one of the lowest in recent history. So uncertainty is one of the key drivers of that, when people decide to hold back and see what will happen in the economy because they're not sure of the direction. Not very healthy for business, I would say, Ken.
That's a very good take on currency, particularly importers. People who have a healthy import-export book have been voicing sort of like those concerns as their number one risk. In fact, I found it interesting you mentioned misinformation, disinformation as the number one
at a global
risk.
Yeah.
In Kenya, what I see from a lot of ordinary business people is the uncertainty on the exchange rate.
Yeah.
Because we are net importers. So people who are ordering their vehicles, motor vehicle dealers, people who are buying food, obviously that has been the talking point. And my take is we are still looking for that equilibrium. It's possibly going to be somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are net importers, so there is always that pressure on the shilling.
Right.
But I also feel that demand for dollars has really reduced. The people who are looking at speculative positions last year have disappeared. And even importers were just supplying to the market.
Right.
They're saying the market is not demanding as much. So if I was importing, I'm an oil marketer,
mm-hmm.
people are not consuming as much fuel as they used to just because of the economy being what it is. So you find demand $4. So there are two stories. There's the supply side, where you have a lot of dollar flows coming in from the infrastructure bonds, the euro bonds.
Right.
But on the demand side, actually, demand is very weak.
Mm.
You know, companies are not selling as much. Kenyans are not buying as much. So I, as an importer, I'm actually quite limited in what I'm ordering. So I think those two things have helped the shilling gain.
Okay.
But to what extent will that continue moving forward now that the CBK has the reserves to be able to intervene at any point? But on that point that you raised on the global side of misinformation and disinformation, how do you see that playing out from a Kenyan perspective, Sospeter?
Yeah, so what the world economy, I already mentioned that, I mean, they view that one of the key risks, and the reason why they view it as a key risk is in the next 2 years, we're going to have a lot of political changes in terms of elections across the globe. America is already in line. Senegal has just completed.
Right.
A couple of other countries will go into election. Now, the challenge with this is we all remember Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah.
So with the growth of data, social media, then misinformation and disinformation becomes critical, because if such is going to affect political changes, so you can imagine, it may not be what we was envisaged. People will make will go to the polls without fundamentals, is because they have been misinformed. And indeed, a large part of the population across the world is gullible to such. And we'll be talking a little bit more in terms of what then AI plays into this field, because it just comes to make it worse.
Yeah,
so that's their perspective of misinformation and disinformation in terms of its potent place in the current world status. Yeah,
and that's a bit powerful, because somebody would also argue with the rise of social media, new voices that would not have made it to the mainstream have come up, where there's freedom of expression. How do you balance those two, where somebody would say, actually, this is an opportunity where, if you know, I'm a voter in a distant county in Kenya, for example, there's a gubernatorial election happening there. Historically, I would have depended on the big media houses to tell me, but with the rise of social media, it means the small influencers in those counties are actually getting their voice, whether to the extent that they are informing or disinforming people. Now that's a different situation. But do you also see that's an opportunity in terms of people are getting more data points to make a decision?
Yeah, so Ken, definitely. I mean, the challenge is that with every good thing, there's always the flip side, the negative thing. So social media, powerful tool in terms of ease of access of information and spread of information. The only danger is if that information is the wrong information. One of the other risks associated with this that was identified in the World Economic Forum Global Risk Report, the 19th edition, is societal polarization. Again, information, social media has been used a lot. So polarization in society can occur either politically or socially, where people are divided along either class lines or political ideological lines or tribal lines, as it is in part of the world. So yes, agreed with you, Ken, that there's positivity coming from social media in that it's a cheap, affordable, or let's say affordable way of passing information even to the remote places. Although, Ken, we have to take that with a bit of pinch of salt. We've seen that in Kenya, but penetration of mobile phones, for example, across the world is still very low. So,
right. That's a good point.
So it's a positive. It needs to be encouraged.
Yeah.
What we are probably going to be seeing is stricter legislation around mis and disinformation,
right.
Where government will need to, will want to take up more responsibility over information that is passed and crack down on sources of mis and disinformation.
You know, you mentioned something to do with AI, and maybe you can actually just tell us,
yeah.
Because you see, in fact, it is something that is very, we are adapting it very, very fast.
Very fast.
And I mean, its usability and the way you can mold and form it and shape it into the information that it wants to give you, just even taking, for example, ChatGPT, which at least I've actually seen it in use. And I think even when Hatch was here last time, he actually did say that one of the tools that, in terms of risk that you also use, AI is also now being one of the tools that are being used, because you just have to, you see, AI is feeding off what you give it.
Exactly.
But if that is also an area, I mean, for every yin, there's a yang.
Yes.
So in terms of AI, yeah.
So let's start with the positive.
Right.
So AI is revolutionary. I mean, it will make life easier for a lot of people.
It has already started doing that. Yeah.
In fact, what I see AI doing is, if you remember during COVID, the COVID crisis, the vaccine that was developed took a record time. Yeah. So we are likely to see AI influencing. And remember, I spoke about velocity earlier. So the speed of getting solutions is likely to heighten, because all of a sudden it's easy to churn out or to analyze lots of information from different data sources and make a quick decision. And that's what AI does.
Yeah.
So there'll be a lot of positivity maybe in medical research and any other form of research. However, if I give you a case in point of AI being used unethically, just we were talking earlier where there is a case where a lot of people already know deepfake. Deepfake is a form of AI.
Yes.
So there's this gentleman in Hong Kong who actually sat in a Zoom meeting with his supposed superiors in UK. In a Zoom meeting, the way you'd have a typical Zoom meeting, and he got instruction and he went ahead and effected them, transferring 25 million Hong Kong dollars to some fictitious account. Only later on to find out that the people in the Zoom report were using deepfake. They were not his bosses. So AI will be abused. I think yesterday's newspaper, we saw a whole series of reports from universities decrying the use of AI, because students all of a sudden now...
And the thesis, I forgot that part.
But there'll be, I mean, there'll be repercussions, there'll be opportunities then for universities, governments then to create other tools complementing AI, either to capture plagiarism or unethical use of AI.
Yes.
So there's likely to... So yeah, for every yin, there's a yang. So AI is good, but... and the European Union has already begun the process of regulating AI because it needs to be regulated.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, from a financial sector position, which you're a big player, what if... A lead in the financial services point blank asked you, what is the biggest risk facing financial services and what is the biggest opportunity in 2024? How would you address that?
Okay. Yeah, so under the current circumstances, we are coming from a high inflation season. We are coming from a weak Kenya shilling. We are coming from not very positive economic performance. So businesses have already started feeling the heat. If I was to add, obviously the new administration, Kenya Kwanza, came with a very ambitious agenda and introduced a raft of laws, you know, the housing levy, the new taxation laws, where they increased personal income tax, the social health insurance, the NSSF. Remember, most of these taxes or obligations cut across both the employer and employee. So some of the biggest risks I think businesses are facing is high cost of doing business, driven by all these different... If you look at, for example, the association with the high cost of doing business and the global or geopolitical events taking place, the war in Gaza, for example. So any business, or the war in Ukraine, any business which had was part of the global supply chain, relying on some imports along that line, all of a sudden, because of the weak Kenya shilling and the rise in fuel cost and everything, so high cost of doing business is driving some businesses out of, or some entities out of business. So I would say that's really a big concern. Closely related with that, we talked about credit risk, because businesses trade with businesses. So if my business has been affected, I'm unlikely to be able to meet my obligations in a timely manner. If you look at this in a broader sense, the government, who is the biggest spender in the economy, has not been able to meet its obligations. So we have this whole issue of pending bills and everything, and that is affecting businesses and driving people out of businesses. In terms of opportunities, I see that this is a good season for businesses to, you know, embrace four things. The first one is agility.
Right.
You know, just finding new ways of doing things, innovation and all that, finding new products, new markets, and that kind of a thing. The other one is resilience, you know, the ability to withstand these hard economic times, survive through them and thrive at the other end of business. And we had looked at this from a COVID scenario where we had, for example, the home delivery business really thriving during COVID. Of course, working sustainably and that kind of a thing. So there are opportunities for businesses to reinvent themselves under the circumstances.
Excellent. And I think you've captured it very well. From a long term, we've talked about it, 2024. What about from a 5 to 10 year perspective? What are the big things on your horizon?
Yeah, so in terms of the long term, let me look at, let me focus on one thing. So if you look at the World Economic Forum report, and you know, we are looking at different horizon scans here. 5 out of 10 long term risks, this is 5 years to 10 years.
Right.
5 out of the top 10 are in the environment space, climate change. So extreme weather events, critical changes to the earth systems, biodiversity loss and ecosystem collapse, natural resource shortages, pollution. And I had mentioned earlier on, it's amazing how this part of the world, although we are victims of this, we don't seem to fully appreciate it, because climate change has economic consequences.
Right.
Yeah. So we are coming from a season where last year we faced a bit of drought because the rainfall patterns have definitely changed. So there was a delay. Now that has serious economic challenges to many communities, because a drought will drive millions of people into poverty. Just reading yesterday's newspaper, Ethiopia is just receiving a 340 million grant from the World Bank because 3 million Ethiopians are facing starvation and famine. And in a drought-stricken part of Ethiopia. So those are the effects of climate change, which boils down back to the economy and diversion of funds into meeting or mitigating this climate change action. So you could mention other things like disease, malnutrition, and the like. However, there is also opportunity in this space, as much as climate change is a big risk. So to answer you, I mean, that's one of the biggest concerns globally, and I would say even locally, something that we need to focus on. So the COP28, one of the discussions that happened in Dubai just early, late last year, there's a climate resilience fund that has been set up. So the Global North is being made to pay for some of the actions that they have, the sins of the past. So I guess this part of the world, we need to take advantage of that fund to build our own resilience against some of the things that we've talked about, whether it's drought, famine, poverty, economic crisis, which are directly attributable to climate change.
I think those funds will go to
hopefully they'll go into the right places.
So Peter, what are companies meant to be looking out for? I mean, you know, as you were saying, how all this risk volatility. I mean, we left COVID, got into three wars, and now the shilling. I think every single day you wake up and ask, as my of our chairman used to ask, what is new? So what are companies meant to be looking out for? And Ken, I think you also told me, when you are forecasting, we cannot even be talking about 1 year. Now it is six months, and then after 6 months, you actually check and see, and then you'll make a decision. You have to be very flexible and on your toes. So Peter, what are companies meant to be looking out for at such a time?
Yeah.
And I know when we discuss risk, as Ken always says, we always think that is for those companies. Those ones are on the NSE.
The big ones.
Those big ones. But every single person, including everyone, even the Matatu guy, you know, I mean, everyone is feeling the effect of fuel one way or another, the dollar one way or another, the credit inaccessibility, and even AI. Yeah.
So, yeah, let's break down that into two.
Right.
Because obviously the bigger entities have mastered the game, yes. Most of them.
Oh, yeah.
However, Nokia and BlackBerry were also big entities, but they seem not to have mastered it.
Right.
But two terms which I'll keep on repeating, agility and resilience.
Okay.
Yeah. So there has been talks, you know, it's becoming a buzzword, right. But it's really important for entities to build agility.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a saying, as agile as a monkey, you know. Yeah. You've seen a monkey jumping from one tree to another. It's really flexible. It's really fast. So agility allows companies to be adaptable to change,
sure.
Because VUCA and permacrisis then means there's always change happening in our environment. So you need to be agile. You need to be quick to adapt to change, whether it is in your markets for your products,
okay.
Or it's in the products themselves,
right.
or the customers themselves. So companies need to move away from traditional ways of doing things to being more agile in terms of their leadership, in terms of their structure, in terms of their culture.
Right.
They need to be a little bit more agile.
Mm-hmm.
Resilience, and resilience, just to break it down now to the second part, you know, what does that mean in layman's term, especially for small entities?
Right.
You know, as little as being able to save a buffer for the rainy days,
okay.
that's a form of building resilience. So corporates are then being forced to think about resilience. And resilience, we've defined it as, you know, the ability to go through a disruption,
mm-hmm.
survive the disruption, mm-hmm. then thrive after the disruption. So this applies both for big entities and small entities. Okay. And it's interesting, we had this conversation earlier on, so how do you build resilience?
Yeah.
So being on the lookout constantly,
mm-hmm.
In terms of environmental, and environment, we mean operating environment, what's happening around you. Changes in the law is something that can impact businesses and has impacted businesses,
true.
Meaning even closure of some businesses.
Yep.
Economic changes and all that kind of volatility. So businesses, and whether big or small, need to be on the lookout and consistently analyze the changes that are happening around them and how they will affect the businesses, then adopt a form of agility. So for the SMEs, maybe as a parting shot there is, you know, Ken had asked me earlier, so how does an SME manage risk? Where they can't afford to hire a risk manager, they can't afford to build a risk management framework, a complex one. So what I normally challenge and encourage SMEs is to build capacity of the individuals, you know, the leaders, the board, the employees, because risk management is a subject for everybody within an entity. Everybody is a risk expert. You just need to point them in the right direction. So capacity building for them to understand risk management, and move on from there. Yeah.
On the issue of agility, and I find that point very interesting, how do you inculcate agility? I say it's a buzzword, but what are the practical things that businesses can do to say, yes, we are more agile?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So that's a whole topic on its own. So I'll try to in under 1 minute. In under 1 minute. So six areas where we can cultivate agility.
Okay.
The first one is in leadership. Okay. So the leadership and management needs to be agile, mm-hmm. in terms of their outlook, in terms of their worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's where it begins or falls. The other area is the organizational structure.
Okay.
So organizations are moving from very hierarchical structures to more flat structures. Why? Because agility calls for quick decision making.
Right.
So the flatter the structure, the quicker the decision making.
Yeah.
The other one is people, governance, and ways of working. So if I was to narrow down maybe on people,
yeah.
is breaking down silos, breaking down bureaucracy, and allowing people to be empowered to make decisions. That's what agility means at an organizational level. So instead of respecting the hierarchy, if there's a problem in the production chain, somebody's empowered to make a quick decision and be held responsible for them. And then this eventually builds into an agile culture.
Right.
So in summary, that's what I'll define agility for businesses. Yeah.
Okay. I expound about governance.
Yes.
That is also so key. I mean, in a world where we are having a lot of accountability,
mm-hmm.
governance is very key.
Mm-hmm. So agility in governance. So
right.
agility in governance simply means the governance is led by the governing body, which is a board of directors.
Right.
So when we interchangeably, we can talk about leadership and
okay.
management and governance.
Right.
So even at the board level, the board creates the environment.
Okay.
And one of the environment that encourages agility is an environment called safe to fail. Yeah.
Wow.
And Simon Sinek, I think, has been key in talking about allowing failure within organizations as a way of fostering innovation, as a way of fostering agility within the organization. So if people are afraid to fail, then the organization becomes rigid.
Okay.
And that has to be dictated right from governance level.
That's very interesting. Ken, do you have any parting shots? Because, I mean, I'll just let the speaker just continue this conversation.
This has been excellent, really. And I think that last take on governance and boards, really creating an environment, because innovation cannot thrive where people are not taking risks.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And where there's innovation, indeed, there's a possibility of success or failure.
Yeah.
So I love that analysis of Simon Sinek's books on really safe to fail spaces,
right.
because that's where innovation comes from. I think for me, this was a good parting shot.
That was Sospita Biga, head of risk at CPF, and Ken Gishinga, chief economist, Mentoria Economics, and myself, Nyambura Ndongo, on another episode of Financial Forecast. And we come to the end of a really great show. You can catch this episode and every other Financial Forecast episode we've had anywhere you get your podcast from, and for Capital FM, from the Capital FM SoundCloud page. Remember, you can always get, I mean, we have gone through a whole entire book about risk. So if you want more economic insights, you can reach out to Sospita at CPF. You can reach out to Ken at info@mentoria.co.ke for in-depth economic insights, data analysis, forecasting, risk management. For us, we say good evening, enjoy the month of April, and coming up next, we are about to get very much hyped with Wanjira. Good evening.